What's behind the latest military coup in Burkina Faso? The president is arrested as soldiers mutiny against the government's failure to stop attacks by armed groups. What's required to restore stability? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Imran Khan. It's the African country where military coups happen all too often. In the latest attempt in Burkina Faso, the internet is down, the main TV station's under military control, and soldiers say they've detained President Roch Kabore. Tension escalated on Saturday when security forces fought with protesters who blamed the government for failing to stop attacks by armed groups. On Sunday, soldiers mutinied at military bases in the capital, Ouagadougou, and two other cities. The leaders of the revolt made six demands, including the replacement of military commanders and better equipment to fight armed groups. Some protesters showed their support in street demonstrations. The defense minister went on TV to deny a coup attempt, and the government imposed a curfew. Nicholas Hack is monitoring developments for us from Dakar in Senegal.
There are celebrations in the capital, Ouagadougou, and across the country, many saying that President Roch Kabore had it coming. He was seen as weak and inefficient in the face of growing attacks from armed groups linked to ISIL and al-Qaeda. And the tipping point happened in November, where security forces, almost 50 of them, died in the region of Inata. And there was public outcry when it turned out that not only were they ill-equipped, but they had gone weeks without receiving their food rations. President Roch Kabore was seen as a president that was not equipping the soldiers sent on the front line without their food rations. And so there were protests across Burkina Faso, and those protests were clamped down. President Roch Kabore made a series of measures, dismissing his government several times, most recently dismissing several senior officers. Some of them were arrested, allegedly plotting a coup against him. And so it seems now that they, the military, are now in charge of Burkina Faso. This may be a step back for democracy in a region that has seen three coups, one in Guinea, the other in Mali, and now in Burkina Faso. But for many in the country, it's seen as a step forward for better security. More than 1.5 million people have been displaced and over 2,000 people have been killed in a country on the verge of chaos, despite the support of French forces that are on the ground. Nicholas Hawk, Al Jazeera, for Inside Story.
We'll introduce our panel in just a moment, but first, let's take a quick look at how we got here. Now, as Nicholas Hack mentioned, attacks linked to ISIL and al-Qaeda have killed thousands and displaced around 1.5 million people. The military has been suffering losses since the violence began in 2016. Last December, more than 50 security forces were killed in the north. The continued killing of civilians triggered demonstrations against the government. Military leaders also complained about a lack of equipment and training. In October, President Roch Kabore replaced the chiefs of the army and the air force to quell discontent within the military. And earlier this month, a dozen soldiers were arrested on suspicion of conspiring against the government. Let's bring in our guests. In Accra, the capital of Ghana, Emmanuel Kwesi Eneng, Director of Research at the Kofi Annan International Peacekeeping Training Center. In Uppsala, in Sweden, Jesper Bjarnason, Senior Researcher at the Nordic Africa Institute. And from Casablanca in Morocco, Adama Gay, a journalist, author and former Director of Information at ECOWAS, that's the Economic Community of West African States. A welcome to you all. I'd like to begin in Casablanca, in Morocco, with you, Adama Gay. President Roch Kabore has seen the writing on the wall for a long time. In fact, he did arrest senior military leaders, but that's seemingly not enough to stop a coup from happening. How much trouble is he in?
Oh, he's in big trouble because this was, as you rightly say, writings on the wall. People were not happy with him, the civilians in the country, but also the military, they were not happy. And you remember in November last year, 14 November, 53 Burkinabe gendarmes were killed in a town called Inata, and the military complained that they didn't have even ammunition and food for themselves. So the president then decided to reshuffle his government, to change his minister of defense, and to even take charge himself. But this was too little and too late. And indeed, there was really a race towards its toppling. Just 2 weeks ago, there was an attempt to topple him by Lieutenant Colonel Zungrana. This gentleman was arrested and put in control by the military as he was until yesterday. But people, including a colleague of his, decided to strike yesterday through a mutiny by expressing their discontent towards the president of Burkina Faso. And progressively, as people cheered to them in the city, not just of Ouagadougou, but in Wayuguya, Kaya, and elsewhere, they felt emboldened. And later, despite the victory of Burkina Faso at the African Cup of Nations, leading it to the steam to the quarterfinal, the military said that this was the opportunity for them to fix forever this problem, because their president, Mr. Roch-Marc Kabore, was somehow a lame duck president, unable to handle the security challenges. He was not really very strong and he didn't deliver the results that people expected him to bring to his country ever since he became president in 2015.
Well, let's make that point to Emmanuel Kwesi Aning. Burkina Faso has a unique, perhaps more than any other African nation, problem when it comes to fighting Al-Qaeda and ISIL. Indeed, a couple of years ago on ISIL message boards, there was talk that they wanted to make Burkina Faso the capital of the new caliphate. That never happened, but the fighting has been tough for Burkina Faso. Does the army in Burkina Faso have a point? They're not equipped to fight this fight, and this is why they've mounted this action.
Well, I mean, I think the army does have a point, but it's not just about a lack of appropriate and adequate logistics. It's also about the doctrine. It's about the leadership. It's about the nature of the messaging and understanding of the enemy that they are trying to resist. Armies work best when there's clear political leadership with a message that, you know, that drives the army and ensures that their actions are coherent. I think that political leadership of leading, of oversight, of control, of ensuring that the structures themselves within the army function effectively to be able to take on this enemy has been weak, leading to the army itself creating atrocities or committing atrocities that has led the army to lose some of the support from the populace. The failure to establish a caliphate, for me, is the temporary reversal. There's something called the Burkina government.
Well, let me take that point to our next guest, Jesper Bjarnason, who is in Uppsala in Sweden. Are we at a stage where the president is actually afraid of his own military? He was afraid that they were becoming too powerful, so he didn't give them what they needed to fight that fight. And now they're actually putting him under house arrest. His strategy has almost backfired because he was afraid of them in the first place.
Well, I think it is a very tricky sort of structure to maneuver for the president. And that will be true of any president succeeding Kabore, if that is what we're seeing now. We have to distinguish, first of all, of course, between the troops actually fighting the war against jihadism in the north of the country and then the central military leadership. And as Mr. Gay said, there has been some replacements now in the military leadership. But I still heard soldiers protesting yesterday calling for another change of the head of the army, not of the president. So I think, first of all, we have to nuance our understanding of what the different factions of the army actually are asking for. And then we also have to distinguish between the military elite and the sort of the troops themselves. I think the president's challenge has been that he has, as far as I've understood, he has appointed new leadership within the armed forces now that seem to be sort of a group formerly referred to as Le Boys, who were loyal to the state during the attempted coup of 2015. And he may have sort of marginalized other actors within the armed forces that are now reacting to not being more central to power. So it's a very complicated structure and a very complicated game the president has had to play there.
Adama Gay, would you agree that factionalism within the army is a big driver of what we're seeing? There is this army in the north that isn't very happy with the central army leadership, as our guest has just pointed out. Would you say that that's true?
Yeah, that's true. And also, this is compounded by the fact that there is literally a division in terms of advantages given to what we can consider the Mexican general in the army. We have been benefiting from the resources of the state, whereas the lower rank people who took actually the coup and did it yesterday didn't benefit from it. So this is a reality. But beyond that, I think the country was not properly managed. Before Mr. Kabore came to power for almost 27 years, after the demise of Thomas Sankara in October 1987, his killing by the people surrounding the former president Blaise Compaoré, the country for 27 years, somehow, with the compromissions, deals made with the jihadists and terrorist forces by Mr. Compaoré, the previous president, they managed to literally stabilize and put away Burkina Faso from the countries that were affected by this plague of jihadism and terrorism. But now, what has happened ever since Mr. Roch Kabore, by the way, who is a former really powerful person within the Compaoré regime, but who managed to change gear and become a reinvented Democrat. Ever since he came, the problems have been multiplying. You have 1.5 million Burkinabe people who live as displaced people within the country. You have famine in the country. You have economic difficulties, and the military is disgruntled. All these things have compounded the problem and made it untenable from Mr. Roch Kabore. I know personally Mr. Kabore for many years. He's a gentleman, but he's not the type of leader, strong leader, that the Mr. Gentleman from Accra said, who can devise a clear policy that the military would follow. He was really playing tricks to make sure that anybody who is empowered in the military would be loyal to him, when we know that most of the military, they were somehow groomed under the previous president, Mr. Compaoré.
ECOWAS have just come out with some statements, quite crucial statements, actually. They're describing it as an attempted coup. They've also said that the army is responsible for the physical integrity of Roch Kabore himself. And ECOWAS have also said that they want to see rapid change in the situation. Is anybody going to be listening to ECOWAS, Emmanuel Kwesi-Eneng?
Well, I mean, this sounds very much like a repetition of the same statements with respect to Mali, with respect to Guinea and now Burkina Faso. I think the primary element here are the democratic reversals, the inability of those who govern to really have a handle on the multiplicity of problems that their country has. And for ECOWAS to play that intervening mediatory role of nudging its leaders towards a more inclusive, open, dialogic form of governance. So there wouldn't be much listening because, look, the demographics on the sub-region have changed. You know, people are increasingly becoming impatient. They are demanding governance that speaks to the challenges that they face on a daily basis. And both Adam and Bjarnason have told us quite a lot about the realistic day-to-day challenges of people. And I think West Africa's political leadership, including ECOWAS's leadership, must be sensitive to the driving forces of the majority of these people in the sub-region. Poorly educated, unemployed, no housing, poor health benefits, and increasingly unemployable and frustrated. But with sophisticated phones to know what is happening elsewhere, and this dichotomy of living in extreme poverty and non-functioning societies, whilst knowing what their counterparts elsewhere are having.
Right, let me bring that point to Jesper Bjørnesen. ECOWAS is the Economic Community of West African States. Is it actually a player in this particular scenario? Or, like our guest has just said, it's, again, the statements that we've heard before, and they're not really resonating with the people, the poor on the ground?
Well, I would say that if we look at what's happening in Mali, I think ECOWAS is trying to reimpose itself as a relevant actor when it comes to in Mali, trying to convince the military junta to hand over power to a civilian-led transitional government. But it's true that ECOWAS has been criticized of being sort of a president's club, where, you know, the heads of state of countries with questionable democratic records are looking out for each other rather than looking out for their populations. So I think ECOWAS has a legitimacy problem to deal with. But I do think that these kinds of statements are necessary as a minimum. I think that not making condemning statements about a potential military takeover would be even worse. So I don't think there's much else for ECOWAS to do at the moment. But they will have to work hard to deserve credibility in the eyes of West African people in general, I would say.
Adama Gay, the same point to you. Are ECOWAS a player right now?
No, ECOWAS has lost credibility. Take the case of Mali, the huge type of sanction they decided against a country that is almost going down the drain has been rejected by the population across, not just West Africa, but across Africa. This is President Claes Lieberman's earlier. They are there just for themselves. Why didn't they react when Guinea-Conakry president, the former president, Mr. Alpha Condé, was a civilian and he was killing people who were demanding democracy? Well, why don't they react when Sudanese people are being killed? Our leaders, they closed their eyes on constitutional civilian coup. And now they are coming trying to maintain to power people the ordinary citizens do not like. As a former director of communication of ECOWAS, the change in demographic with youngsters coming up, knowing what is going on in the world, and they demand an ECOWAS of the people, not an ECOWAS of the state or an ECOWAS of the head of state. So this is something they need to accept and acknowledge and open up the field of conversation to make sure that they do not end up appearing as uttering this kind of statement that people do not pay attention to. Mr. Roch Marc Kabore has been in power for almost 6 years, and the problem has been worsening.
Well, we'll get into it. We will get into that.
Elected to serve the citizens.
We will get into that, but I do want to bring in...
ECOWAS has failed.
Well, let's talk about the other organisation before we get into how long the president has been powerful. Emmanuel Kwesi Eneng, where is the African Union in all of this? Do they have a role to play?
Well, I mean, they've always had a role to play, but the structure of the relationship between the African Union and its regional economic communities is that ECOWAS, based on the subsidiarity principle, becomes the first regional organisation that should respond to the challenges that Burkina Faso has faced. And the African Union will take guidance from Abuja, where ECOWAS is based. But therein lies the challenge. And as Adama is saying, how do we ensure that we have institutions that are responsive and sensitive to the needs of people? Now, when you have institutions that are increasingly reactive and are not perceived by the generality of the populace that they lead as being understanding and nuanced in their perception of their problems, then statements emanating from these institutions are perceived to be purely platitude now. Burkina Faso hasn't happened overnight. We saw ECOWAS meetings in Accra where they were focusing on Mali. So that gives an impression that there's a lack of appropriate intelligence or the...
Sorry, we seem to have lost Emmanuel there. We will come back to you. Jesper Bjørnesen, here we go. You have ECOWAS, you have the African Union. They are players within this entire scenario that's playing out right now. But you also have a generational problem of corruption, of mismanagement that's taken place that's led to this anger. None of this is solvable overnight. So literally the future for Burkina Faso in the next few months will be a military almost failed state, surely.
Well, let's hope for the best, I would say. Let's first see what happens in these coming days. As far as I know, it hasn't really been confirmed that this is a complete military takeover. I would look back to the popular uprising of 2014 and say that even before the regional jihadist terrorism became such an imposing problem on Burkina Faso, the country was facing a very steep transition from the 27-year rule of Blaise Compaoré into a more democratic state. And that challenge was then compounded by the growing threat of and menace of jihadist terrorism. So already at that time when Mr. Compaoré came into power, you know, that was a very steep challenge to face. I think he's been fairly realistic in the promises he's made to some extent, but of course, any head of state would struggle to keep promises under those conditions. So what he has failed at dramatically is, of course, communicating the extent to which those promises were just not possible to keep. The question of whether we're heading towards a military state now, I think we should be very careful about normalizing military rule in the region. I think that's a first key point there. And I think it's up to all these different actors, regional, continental, and international, to keep pressure on any military actor stepping forward and claiming leadership now. I think it's important that we find a way back to civilian rule if this is indeed a military takeover.
Adama Gay, our guest, has just said we should not normalise military coups. But there is a scenario, maybe, that this might be a good thing because of the jihadist terrorism, the jihadist armed groups that they face in the north of the country. Maybe this is what's needed to defeat those groups. And clearly, that's an international objective. Doesn't have anything to do with the people of Burkina Faso and helping them, but it is an international objective. Is there a response here that is actually good?
Yeah, there is a global recession of democracy in the world. The summit on democracy organized recently by President Biden in America was a failure. And many in Africa are looking to Turkey, China, Russia, to strongmen leading some countries as model to emulate. Now, you have also to take into account the history of Burkina Faso. This is not the first time the military come into the political fray. I remember General Lancel Lamizana Sangoule. He was a military in the 70s. Afterward, there was another military. And then in the 80s, there was Thomas Sankara, who came to power in 1983-84. And then Blaise Compaoré was also a military. So this is not something new in the history of Burkina Faso. The problem is, you can't call countries to demand for civilian rule to be in place when those civilian rule, once they come to power, they entrench themselves and only privatize the resources of their countries and act for their sole interest, not for the common good. And right, this is the problem. Because I remember I was in Algiers in June 1999 when the then OAU, the predecessor of African Union, decided to ensure that the military leave the management of the countries to allow the civilian. But it was against a deal that the civilian would deliver on good governance, that they would ensure the physical integrity of the countries, and they would promote good governance of their resources and democracy. This is not happening, and the deal is failing, and don't be surprised that more military, prompted by African youngsters and other African public opinion makers, influencers, will enter into the political fray because, like the other gentleman said, the African Union and other African organizations, they are absent out of the scene, and the United Nations organization do not seem to understand the challenges brewing within West Africa at the moment and within Africa in general, to say the least.
Well, thank you very much to all our guests, Emmanuel Kwesi, Jesper Bjarnason and Adama Gay. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Imran Khan, and the whole team here in Doha, bye for now.